Welcome, listener, to episode 16 of the Antigen Internet Radio Show. That was Dolores Mondo Stash with Grapes and Coagulated Nightmares from the Folklore of Despair album. And my name is Jason, and I'll be talking into a foam sponge for the next hour. Concealed behind the sponge, a condenser microphone containing two charged metal plates, which form a capacitor. The acoustic waves produced by my voice vibrate one of the plates, causing a change in capacitance, which generates a small electrical signal. This is transformed by pulse code modulation into a digital format that can be recorded, edited, compressed, and then transferred to Shipful of Bombs HQ. When the signal is broadcast, it is mystically reconfigured by the malign psychic will of a sinister cabal of blood-sucking reptilian shapeshifters into 5G radiation, weakening your immune system and leaving you vulnerable to the coronavirus that was accidentally released into the general population after white hat activists contaminated a supply of adrenochrome, a recreational drug used by the genetically modified lizard-human hybrid elite. A drug they extract from the pituitary glands of tortured children. Now, some listeners out there in Southend might be thinking, that makes sense. Finally, someone has explained why so many political leaders have contracted COVID-19. Others may be thinking, what a load of bollocks. 5G doesn't cause COVID. COVID was engineered to facilitate the rollout of 5G, to keep people in their homes as governments construct a network of 5G towers as part of a global plan to depopulate the Earth, engineered by the UN or Bill Gates. When I started this show as a podcast in April 2020 to document Britain's descent into lunacy and famine, 20 5G masts had been vandalised or destroyed in the UK in the week before the show went out by people who knew that 5G towers transmitted coronavirus. The University of Oxford conducted a survey of 2,500 people in the UK, finding 21% of them believed to some extent that Bill Gates had created the virus to depopulate the Earth. But how reliable was their belief-forming mechanism? The theory linking 5G to COVID was persuasive, having been endorsed by top experts, including professional celebrity Amanda Holden and the former boxer Amir Khan. But how do some people know that 5G transmits COVID at the behest of the global reptilian elite, while the rest of us, the naive sheeple of the world, go about our daily lives in a shared delusional state, attributing the enormous COVID death toll to underfunded services, government incompetence, and here in the UK, what would once have been called corruption? How do we know who to believe? Do we believe the researchers, investigative journalists, and whistleblowers with their so-called evidence? Or do we believe a man who has spent his professional career being repeatedly punched in the head? The time has come to make that choice. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and you believe that the COVID death toll is attributable to underfunding, incompetence, and ministerial interference in the procurement process by a government of opportunistic chancers who saw the pandemic as a once-in-a-lifetime cash grab for their mates. Or you take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I'm required to tell you that the red pill is only approved for veterinary usage.
Dreams. I'm being followed and pursued by something.
And I could feel that there was somebody behind.
I was running and I was being chased.
I'm running down the street, into a house, through the house.
Down the stairs.
Out the back.
I was being chased.
Faster and faster.
And I ran for all I was worth.
My clothes were dragging me back.
I was running away.
I was running.
And I ran.
So I run along the corridor and I run up the stairs. I keep running up these stairs and round the corner. I sometimes run down the stairs into the corridor and I keep running and running and running.
My legs wouldn't go quick enough. I couldn't get my breath to call out.
I was running away. I was running very, very fast. Somehow I couldn't stop running.
I was running and I fell over the mountain.
There was a crocodile chasing me.
I was running.
There was a crocodile chasing me. I swam as fast as I could to get away from the crocodile. The crocodile suddenly changed into a lion and then that changed into a tiger.
The animals really, I suppose, don't mean to chase me, but because I'm frightened and I run, they follow me up.
So I run along the corridor and I run up the stairs.
And some great monstrous shape walks towards me in the corridor.
And I run up the stairs.
My legs wouldn't go quick enough.
And I keep running and running and running. Running and running and running.
Up a big slope. And my legs wouldn't go quick enough.
I was running and I was being chased.
There was somebody after me, chasing me. Up a big slope.
And I keep running and running and running. Running and running and running.
I couldn't get my breath to call out.
So I run along the corridor and I run up the stairs.
And some great monstrous shape walks towards me in the corridor.
I'm running down the street, into a house, through the house, out the back, over there, somebody's on. I never see anybody. I know there's somebody behind me, probably, but I never see them.
It's neither a man or a woman. It's just an enormous black shape. It's just a mass of something, matter, coming towards me. A great, big, monstrous-looking mass, not a shape. Just filling up the corridor. But it's neither a man or a woman. It's just an enormous black shape in the corridor, filling up the corridor.
It's a crocodile chasing me.
I was running away.
As I ran faster, I seemed to battle against it even more. My clothes were dragging me back. My clothes were dragging me back.
I was running very, very fast. Somehow I couldn't stop running. I was running away.
My legs wouldn't go quick enough.
And I run up the stairs. The stairs are wide and stone. They're nasty stairs, institutional stairs. I keep running up these stairs and round the corner. I can't go right to the top. I just hide round the second corner. Hoping no one will see me, and then if I hear somebody, I sometimes run down the stairs into the corridor. And all the time, this terrible fear that I'm only in my white liberty bodice, only in my liberty bodice.
I'm being followed and pursued by something. I'm never quite sure what it is. Feeling of running down a staircase. I can still see the staircase, a very wide staircase in an old house. Big carved banisters. They go down in short flights. At the end of each flight, there's a large stained glass window, and I run down the stairs faster and faster, and the something which is following gets nearer and nearer, and I don't know what it is. I have the feeling that it's something which is about to envelop me in some way. It's just this feeling of being followed and pursued. I'm running down a corridor. I'm being followed and pursued by something.
I could feel that there was somebody behind and I was being chased. And I ran for all I was worth till I got to the edge of the cliff. And just as I was getting to the edge of the cliff, I couldn't remember anymore.
I can see this corridor stretching into the distance, the perspective of it just fading into absolute nothingness.
I couldn't remember anymore.
I was running very, very fast. Somehow I couldn't stop running. I came to the edge of a great big cliff.
And just as I was getting to the edge of the cliff,
I couldn't get my breath to call out. I went up, right up to the top, over the other side, and hung on to the cliff.
I could feel that there was somebody behind.
It was some form of beast. It was some form of great ape, and it was loping along. It was making a noise, an uncanny noise. And my clothes were dragging me back, as if I'd been in the water, and my clothes were heavy, and they're becoming heavier, and they're being held by the streams of wind. As I ran faster, I seemed to battle against it even more. And it seemed more difficult to stay on this edge. It was very dark all the way around, and it was a very sharp edge. I knew that if I watched and kept breathing properly, I could keep on the top of this ridge.
Then I sort of felt myself falling over the cliff.
I was falling.
Falling over the cliff. Falling over a cliff.
Suddenly I'm falling. I'm falling upright.
I was falling and twisting.
I'm falling upright.
Running, from the album Dreams by Delia Derbyshire, released on vinyl earlier this year by Phantom Phonographique. Or more correctly, from The Dreams, a collaboration between Delia Derbyshire and poet and dramatist Barry Bermange, who recorded people recounting aspects of recurring dreams which Derbyshire then spliced together and reassembled. It was first broadcast in 1964. For more than 17 million people in the UK, 2021 has been the year in which the Brexit dream has finally become a reality. Blue passports, imperial measurements, and that's not all. No more Brussels bureaucrats trying to straighten our bananas. No more 5-mile tailbacks on the M20 stuck behind a queue of lorries bringing food into the UK. And no more humping heavy bags of groceries home from the supermarket. I admit, I voted Remain. But despite that, I now prefer the company of Brexiteers. Brexiteers are always upbeat, with a glass half full attitude that I find really refreshing. Cynics might say they are easily pleased by a new colour. Ah, look, it's blue. Or by the excitement of being able to dust off their brass weights from the 1940s. But I disagree. I love the way they can find a silver lining for every cloud. Untreated sewage dumped into our rivers? It's an opportunity to make the UK a less attractive destination for migrants and refugees. No food in the supermarkets? It's an opportunity to eat less and lose some of those lockdown pounds. Or eat less, shop local and reset the glutton economy, as a friend of a friend posted on Facebook a couple of weeks ago. But is this vision of broad sunlit uplands real? Are we living the Brexit dream or dreaming that we're living? Ever since Chinese philosopher Xuanzi wrote Shuang Zhao Dreams of Being a Butterfly in the 4th century before the Common Era, people have doubted the evidence of our senses can provide any certainty of reality. Once, Shuang Zhao dreamt he was a butterfly flitting and fluttering about, happy with himself and doing as he pleased. He didn't know that he was Shuang Zhao. Suddenly, he woke up and there he was, solid and unmistakable Shuang Zhao. But he didn't know whether he was Shuang Zhao who dreamt he was a butterfly, or a butterfly dreaming that he was Shuang Zhao. although the fact that the book was written by a philosopher, not by a butterfly, gives us a bit of a clue. Unless, of course, I'm dreaming that I'm saying this, or you're dreaming that you're listening to the radio. But how do we really know that the last year hasn't just been a dream, like season 9 of Dallas? That was a cultural reference for the Ship Full of Bombs target demographic. Descartes proposed in 1641 that there is sufficient similarity between the two experiences for dreamers to be routinely deceived into believing that they're having waking experiences while they're actually asleep and dreaming. However, Thomas Hobbes offered a rebuttal 10 years later. He believed that an absence of the absurd in waking life was a key difference. Though sleeping individuals are too wrapped up in the absurdity of their dreams to be able to distinguish their states, an individual who's awake can tell, simply because the absurdity is no longer there during wakefulness. Which is all well and good until your senses tell you that Nadine Dorries is now Secretary of State for Culture.
The juices let loose and vision void. Blood suckle and honey suck. O rose, thou art sick. Oh, the vision and void. The blood sickle cuts. And little children's heavy heads. My dreams are wrapped all in my bed. Innocence is dripping red. In dreams I'll walk with you. In dreams I'll talk with you. In dreams you're mine.
with Love's Secret Domain from the album of the same name, originally released in 1991. That was taken from the remastered 2CD edition that was released on Infinite Fog in May. Boris Johnson has reshuffled his cabinet and installed Nadine Dorris as Secretary of State for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport. Nadine believes, quotes, "Left-wing snowflakes are killing comedy, tearing down historic statues, removing books from universities, dumbing down Panto, removing Christ from Christmas, and suppressing free speech." She's probably most familiar to listeners of this show as the MP who appeared on I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here in 2012, where she ate the anus of an ostrich. Twitter wags have, rather childishly, focused on her anus eating rather than her record as an MP. And even then, they conveniently failed to present the whole story. Firstly, she ate the anus for money. Although she failed to register her earnings from appearing on the show and was forced to apologise to the Commons in 2013. Secondly, the ostrich was dead. So what is all the fuss about? It was an ordinary, dried ostrich anus, and it wasn't even attached to the ostrich at the time. And really, it's not that different to eating the dried anus of a cow, pig, or elderly sheepdog, the kind of animal anuses that find their way into the UK food chain every day of the week. The kind of anus that we were once able to export to the sausage-loving folk of Northern Ireland before those Brussels bureaucrats came along and denied them their constitutional right to British offal. But standards were higher for Conservative MPs back in 2012, and even though the ostrich was dead when she ate its anus, Nadine Dorris had the whip withdrawn for 6 months until she apologised to David Cameron, our friend Oily Dave, who would never treat a dead animal's orifice in such a disrespectful way. New Culture Secretary Nadine Dorris, our post-Brexit cultural renaissance is in safe hands. Sadly, the reshuffle has left this show without two of its regular content providers. The statue-loving Robert Jenrick has had to fold up his big flag and clear his desk. packing away the sentimental reminders of his time in office.
That big pile of cash, that copy of Asian Babes, and a thank you note from Richard Desmond.
And exams fiasco mastermind Gavin Williamson was sacked as Education Secretary. After the predicted grades disaster, losing his free school meals argument to a footballer, and opening schools for one day before the January lockdown, people were beginning to wonder what he would actually have to do to lose his job. A work colleague suggested he probably confused Rishi Sunak with Alok Sharma in a Zoom call. Rumours now circulating that he'll be rewarded for his incompetence with a knighthood. For listeners from abroad who don't understand how the British honours system works, that's what happens when you're a former party whip with a little red book of incriminating evidence about senior members of the cabinet. Thankfully, some of our favourites survived the reshuffle. Dominic Raab impressed the PM with his ability to pose for a photograph, gripping a phone with a serious look on his face, and was promoted to Deputy Prime Minister. Many have been impressed by the cool way he coordinated a smooth exit from Afghanistan, without even interrupting his holiday in Corfu. And of course, the sterling effort he put into his previous role, as Secretary of State for exiting the European Union. Good to know the country will be in safe hands the next time Boris goes into a hospital without a face mask and shakes hands with people who've contracted a highly contagious respiratory disease.
Sara, 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 S слава мало заду, маньяку пару дыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыдыды paror den tänkta fänga. Vi alla pass man vals att ho. Manja då paror den tänkta fänga. Vi alla pass man vals att ho. Salara sara sa i ramma. 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 Manjato paror de tekta tanga, biar la pas mambau satu. Manjato paror de tekta tanga, biar la pas mambau satu. Manjato paror de tekta tanga, biar la pas mambau satu. Manjato paror de tekta tanga, biar la pas mambau satu. Mambau satu, mambau satu, mambau satu.
That was Indonesian duo Senyawa with Penjiru Menyatu from their album Sujud, released in 2018 on Sublime Frequencies. Penjiru Menyatu means unified counters. So I'm still none the wiser. MP for Suffolk Coastal, Dr. Therese Coffey, kept a job as Secretary of State for Work and Pensions. She faced flak this week for her plan to cut universal credit by £20 a week in October. Fortunately, she had a simple solution. One that would appeal to Conservative voters in a constituency. Work an extra 2 hours a week to make up the difference. Difficult to argue with that. Except that Universal Credit deducts 63p for every pound a person earns over a small monthly work allowance that applies to some claimants. So a worker on £10 an hour, while receiving Universal Credit, would normally earn £7.40 in total from those 2 hours of extra work. They'd have to pull an extra 5.5 hour shift to make up for the £20 cut, or longer if they earn enough to pay tax or national insurance or have childcare costs. It was difficult to know if Therese Coffey was hoping to present a lie as a fact, or whether she's making ministerial decisions about benefits without understanding how they work. Now you might be thinking, I hear what you're ranting about, but who do I trust? Therese Coffey, PhD, Doctor of Chemistry, elected Member of Parliament and Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, or some crank on a niche interest local radio show who thinks talking about benefits is entertainment? Well, unless you have the experience of being on Universal Credit, working an extra 2 hours a week, and then comparing your net income before and after the removal of the uplift, you will not have direct perceptual knowledge to rely on. Instead,
your knowledge will be based on the testimony of Therese Coffey. Philosophers disagree about whether testimony can ever provide knowledge. English philosopher and physician John Locke helpfully devised a 6-point test for determining the degree of confidence a person can have in testimony. And the beauty of his formula is you can apply it broadly, whether it's to Therese Coffey lying on BBC Breakfast, or to a QAnon fruitcake trying to persuade you that Hillary Clinton is operating a child sex trafficking ring from the Comet Ping Pong Pizza Parlor in Washington, D.C. Or even to the contents of this show. The formula takes into account the following factors. 1. Number of witnesses. 2. Their integrity. 3. Their skill. 4. The purpose they have in supplying their report. 5. The internal consistency of what's being conveyed and the circumstances of hearing it. And 6. Whether there's any contrary testimony. Okay. 1. The number of witnesses. Well, no one's witnessed this scenario yet. Change doesn't affect people's universal credit until the first assessment period starting on or after the 6th of October. And only Therese Coffey is aware of her hypothetical solution. 2 and 3. Well, Therese Coffey's integrity and skill are not for me to judge. Labour Deputy Leader Angela Rayner said of the interview that the minister, quotes, either knows she's lying or shouldn't be in the job, end quote. 4. The purpose in supplying the report was, in all likelihood, to deceive the public into wrongly believing that the financial problems caused by the cut could easily be mitigated by claimants taking a small proactive step to work 2 more hours a week. 5. There seems to be little internal consistency. She doesn't apply the arithmetical process set out in the legislation for calculating the net income from working while in receipt of universal credit. And, in August 2021, the Department for Work and Pension's own figures showed that only 37% of universal credit claimants were in work, and there were no stats for how many had the option of an extra 5.5-hour shift. And just under 21% of claimants are not expected to work or look for work due to illness, disability, or caring responsibilities. And 6. Well, contrary testimony can be found in the legislation, specifically Regulation 22.1 of the Universal Credit Regulations 2013, which shows, if nothing else, the need for epistemic vigilance when considering the truth value of testimony from Therese Coffey, who, incidentally, claimed £201,278.38 in expenses on top of her salary in the tax year 2019 to 2020. That works out at £550 a day, or the additional income a universal credit claimant on £10 an hour would bring in if they worked an extra 1,065 hours a week.
You know them a go run out of town when we apply pressure. Babylon time done, yo, send for the stretcher. So where them a deal with, who can hear them a go feel it. When if you go sign and seal it, fire can't done, fire just start. Fire a go button up the whole of them clot. You know them a go run out of town when we apply pressure. Babylon time done, yo, send for the stretcher. So where them a deal with, who can hear them a go feel it. When if you go sign and seal it, fire can't done, fire just start. Fire a go button up this bomber clot. Listen. Fresh out the dungeon, hello when they are in function. Bun up my skin like Bunsen, but dog them with the them tough like Samson. You know my thing, everything me the like action. Me the deal with a long talking, wait for the revolution, but the revolution can't start. We have got blood clot starting. Spend shall I cover this rotting, shut them for see a life as in cold. Politics keeps my people them starving, now you got savages while I got him. While them I make money in a bungle, gal I sell pussy cause they want an next gram of cocaine. When a man them belly start rumble, come out the jungle. Babylon burning today, them I run out of home when we apply pressure. So when I'm gonna deal with who can hear them, I can feel it. When it becomes fine and ceiling, fire can't done, fire just start. Fire I can burn up the whole of them blood clot. Think a rascal, I do a thing. now send for the stretcher. So when them and I deal with, who can't hear them, I got feeling. When if you got sign and seal it, fire can't done, fire just start. Fire rock a button up the whole of them clone. You know them I got run out of town when we apply pressure. Babylon time done, now send for the stretcher. So when them and I deal with, who can't hear them, I got feeling. When if you got sign and seal it, fire can't done, fire just start. Fire rock a button up this bomber clone. Listen. General election, so we're gonna get crashed at Slopway, everything in Babylon section. We're tired of the fuckery and we don't chat. Whatever chat about why we are hunt for the food. And them argue about tax, people are dead. Mom's still crying, the fire's gonna blaze on these aristocrats. So we send for your guinea and boo. Camouflage suit, stack it up on the parliament roof. Slurk to the base with a full team, I'm a men of war. Get wicked by quarter past two. Solutions or 21 gun salute. Simple from a warrior's point of view. Be a face thing when I run upon them. Ah, nobody rass clap.
Featuring Flodan with Pressure from new album Fire, which is out now on Ninja Tune. Second generation immigrant and serial bully Priti Patel also kept a job in the reshuffle. Boris was obviously impressed by a concern for the increasing number of desperate migrants crossing the channel. Patel blamed TikTok, Instagram and Facebook posts for the recent surge in attempts to reach the UK and wrote to the company stating, "What these posts don't mention are the people who have died trying to make this crossing, or those forced to spend 13 hours in unseaworthy boats in freezing waters." Her concern for their lives manifested itself in a radical proposal to keep them safe, a bill making it a criminal offence to rescue someone when they were about to die, and a directive requiring the Border Force to turn these unseaworthy boats around for another perilous 13-hour journey back to France in freezing waters. The Nationality and Borders Bill is now at the committee stage. One part of the bill seeks to amend Section 25A1A of the Immigration Act 1971, which currently creates an offence of knowingly and for gain facilitating the entry into the UK of someone they know or have reasonable cause to believe is an asylum seeker. The bill will remove the words "for gain," meaning that organisations such as the RNLI, with a duty under maritime law to rescue persons in danger at sea, can be criminalised in the same way as people smugglers if they return to UK waters after rescuing someone who turns out to be an asylum seeker. So make sure you tuck your passport in your Speedos if you're planning to dive off the pier at Southend. BS, Nigel Farage's debunked claim that the RNLI has become a taxi service for illegal immigration led to an immediate 3,000% increase in donations to the charity. Demonstrating, I guess, that not everyone in the UK is a total cunt. That was There Are No Birds Here with Mire Drum from the cassette album Hume, released earlier this month and already sold out because there were only 10 copies. You can and should purchase the digital version. It's pay what you want on Bandcamp. I know nothing about this artist except they're apparently based in Ipswich. Boris has announced the future of Britain is going to be measured in rods and furlongs as we return to the pre-metric measurements we all enjoyed before those meddling Brussels bureaucrats came along with their common sense. Apparently, Brexit hadn't created enough barriers to European trade, so we're now going full imperial and we'll be exporting our mackerel to the EU by the bushel. But at least it'll make it easier to export goods to our new trading partners in the USA and Canada. Except that one English imperial hundredweight is £112, a so-called long hundredweight, whereas the inferior colonial hundredweight is only £100. And the Great British Imperial ton is a full £2,240, compared to the puny North American ton, which is 10.7% smaller at £2,000. With no obvious benefit for trading anywhere in the world, this announcement seemed targeted at elderly Brexiteers who still haven't worked out how many pairs in a kilo, even though we went metric in 1965. I'll give you a hint. 0 kilograms of pears on a shelf in your local co-op weighs the same as 0 pounds of pears, as they're still unpicked and rotting on the trees. It's not like centigrade and Fahrenheit. 0 pairs on the shelf doesn't equal 32 fucking pairs once you leave the metric system and revert to the Great British Empire's historical method of weighing non-existent fruit. Personally, I can't wait until they reverse decimalisation. I can't cope with having 100 pennies in a pound. What the fuck is all that about? When I was a lad, it was Libri, Solidi and Denarii, good old-fashioned English LSD. Or pounds, shillings and pence if you didn't go to private school. It was simple. 2 farthings to a halfpenny, 4 threepenny pieces to a shilling, 24 pence to a florin and 63 groats to a guinea. Great British imperial money, the new way forward for the post-Brexit economy. None of this metric multiples of 10 bullshit that these Brussels bureaucrats love so much on the continent. What a time to be alive. Time to order some new flags. If there are any left. Because a Freedom of Information request made by The Guardian revealed that Boris Johnson's government has spent £163,000 on union jacks in the last 2 years. Sadly departed statue-loving Robert Jenrick, who was mocked on BBC Breakfast about the size of his flag. His department alone spent £54,420.89 after being flag-shamed by Nagar Munchetti. Chris joins in the Dead Rat Orchestra, performing in their pre-metric days as the Furlong Bray. Don't pretend you don't know how long a furlong is. It's 40 poles long. It's 40 poles long, or 23,760 barleycorns. Yes, that's an imperial measurement. 36 barleycorns to the inch. Yes, that is an imperial measurement. Get used to it. 36 barleycorns to the inch. I'm starting to get angry. So it's probably a good time to wrap things up. Assuming we can trust in Thomas Hobbes that the obvious lack of absurdity in waking life means we can be confident we're not dreaming, should we simply believe everything we see and hear? Or is some degree of scepticism healthy? Scepticism has existed in one form or another since Pyrrho of Elis back in the 3rd and 4th century before the Common Era. Pyrrho was reported via the writings of Sextus Empiricus to believe that it was possible to suspend all judgment on dogma by keeping an open mind to everything and determining nothing. This would enable the sceptic to attain a state of ataraxia, or serene calm, free from mental disturbance. Unfortunately, modern sceptics, climate deniers, anti-vaxxers, do not appear to have attained this state of serene calm or freedom from mental disturbance. But maybe it's because they're not sceptical enough. Modern sceptics appear to be very selective as to when and how they apply their scepticism, happy to reject empirical evidence, but weirdly substituting less plausible alternatives. So I might suggest, in parts of the country, the NHS and care sector on the point of collapse, using information available to me through my work in adult services. But the modern sceptic would argue that the wards are full of crisis actors pretending to have a cough. I might then say, it's lucky this sceptic will never have children. And they might respond that this is because Bill Gates has used the COVID vaccination program to inject mind-controlling nanotechnology into the women of Earth, mentally compelling them to swipe left on his Tinder profile. Because that's the problem with skeptics. They have an answer for everything. But that's something for the next episode of the podcast. Let's play a tune. People often complain about the lack of popular music in this show, and it's time to remedy that. This month saw the release of Certified Lover Boy by Drake. Trigger warning: this next song contains frequent usage of the N-word. If you're of African or Caribbean heritage and this offends you, I apologise. If you're white and you spend your time challenging and dismantling the institutional racism that permeates every aspect of British society and this offends you, I apologise to you as well. If you're white and you're not doing or saying anything to challenge the status quo and hearing the N-word on the radio offends you, perhaps you ought to think hard about what you find offensive. And if you're a Drake fan and this offends you, then you really only have yourself to blame. This is JPEG Mafia with Drake Era.
See me and you see terror. Oh, yeah. I got stripes like a flag bearer. Peggy, I'm the new young Mayweather. I'm just trying to take hip hop out the Drake era. Fuck a mob, fuck the squad, fuck your mans and them. You singing ass niggas don't know how to be men. I hit your baby mama, get that bitch a new tan, and taught that greasy shit and hit him with a new dance. Oh my god, Peggy, you're so good. Fuck whoever said you up to no good. Cause I'm the man in the street, the man with the beats, and the man holding heat. I drop bombs like I drop science. Drop a body off like a drop client. Drop six, drop top, drop FaceTime. I give a fuck about peace, I spit hate crimes. Who the fuck you know could kill him with these cold lines? Young Peg Lord on the mic, bitch, it's cold time. I piss white boys off in my spare time. Tugging at your heart on the black bend cars. So try me if you really wanna. No, seriously, yeah. Try me if you really wanna. Who the fuck told you Peggy wasn't getting paid? I square up with a square nigga and catch a face. Switch a sweep, ain't nobody can fuck with me. Kill the beat, backpackers, they loving me. Oh my god.
Oh God.
Switch a suite. Ain't nobody can fuck with me. Kill the beat. Backpackers, they loving me. Oh my God.
Oh God.
Fuck you coon ass niggas that don't like rap, but you rap. How fucking dumb is that? Bitch ass niggas be too committed to the act. I know you wanna jock, I'ma take you up the Atlas with your indie ass. And you Metacritic rappers don't get no pass. You got these white girls singing, but niggas never feel you, so you play it like you different. I'm a fucking grave digger, I don't see these boys. You step in my sandbox, you gon' see these toys. You suburban ass niggas need to stay in your place. No snaps, no tweets, this is straight to your face. Fuck 'em, I bring death to any nigga to try to rattle me. You casualties, actually, factually, you ain't as bad as me. Niggas say they charged up, I'ma drain your fucking battery. Split your ass in two and you still will never be half of me. Buster, fuck your mob, fuck your squad, fuck your mans and them. You indie niggas just wanna be black men. I've been real all my life, you like MC Ride. Two crackers call your album nigga and you let that slide. Pussy, get the fuck out of my genre, my genre. Get the fuck out of my genre, my genre. Rich kids tryna go urban, no shaman. But this a new era, I took hip hop hostage, fucker.
Rüyam ne uyuş ne uğra. Sarkın kaçtı skapı geldi fiyat. Sarkın kaçtı skapı. These people fucking other niggas bitches. Let the bass hit them. Fuck it, I'ma split them. Kill a nigga for the ribbons. Yeah. I don't get mad, I get rich. I don't get sad, I get tips. I'm not a waitress, I'm not a waiter. I don't confer, I just counter, 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 counter attack. Bitch, I know you know you know you know you wanna react. But you can't, but you can't, but you can't, you can't. You gon' dance, you gon' dance, you gon' dance, you dance. I hear your hotline blingin', yeah. Got a whole generation of pussy niggas singin'. Niggas don't even know what they want no more.
Was JPEG Mafia. Great when you really need to offend a lot of people at once. Drake Era from the Black Ben Carson triple album, reissued earlier this year. You're listening to Antigen Internet Radio on Ship Full of Bombs, a show that proves left-wing snowflakes really are killing comedy. As this is a current affairs program, I want to end on a lighter note. Like many disaster capitalists, I was excited by the clickbait tagline used by The Independent on Twitter on the 7th of August. Quote, asteroid heading towards Earth is filled with so much precious metal, it'd make everyone on the planet a billionaire. End quote. I expected entrepreneurial Brexiteers to welcome this new opportunity to bring vast cosmic wealth to planet Earth, perhaps even hoping that it would land somewhere in the UK. Imagine Matt Hancock's mates lining up for multi-million pound contracts to supply the people of Great Britain with umbrellas. I also expected the inevitable backlash from people who wanted to see the asteroid remain part of the asteroid belt, and from so-called experts who see a giant asteroid full of rare earth metals hurtling towards the planet as some kind of threat and want it to burn up in the atmosphere, thereby depriving businesses of the opportunity to monetize a once-in-a-lifetime mass extinction event. And then there are the Marxists, no doubt expecting this wealth to be divided equally among every person on the planet. The thing is, Gareth Southgate, if you're listening, if everyone on the planet became a billionaire, money would be worthless and we would all be poor. Think about that. Is that what you want? But alas, my hopes were dashed when I read the article itself and was disappointed to discover I will not die rich, freezing to death in a sunless eternal winter as clouds of dust encircle the Earth. As it turns out, the asteroid in question is safely orbiting between Mars and Jupiter in the asteroid belt, along with the other less valuable asteroids. If you've made it this far into the show, I guess I can play anything now. So I'm going to end with one of my favourite bands, playing a song that's very personal to me as it encapsulates how I feel about living in Brexit Britain. This is Oxbow with Marianne Faithful, with the untitled 10th track from Serenade in Red, released in 1996. I'll sign off now, in case you don't get to the end of the song. Thank you for listening. Please join me again on Shipful of Bombs at 8 p.m. on the 18th of October for another episode of the Antigen Internet Radio Show. Stay safe out there, and believe nothing.
I was a little girl. She told me. told me when I couldn't help myself to get down on my knees and pray. And I fell down on my knees, and these are the words that I said.